The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
We may just have been given the roadmap on how to turn it around. What am I talking about? Well, not even just global warming, but the whole global system. You've got to stay tuned for this show. It really is promising to be one of my favorites. I say that because the producers of a riveting new film called Thrive will be joining me in our second segment. At least that's the plan. It is an ambitious and groundbreaking piece of work that not only connects the dots, but connects all the dots about what is going on right now, what is going down right now in terms of consolidation of monetary power, access to food, access to energy, and suppression of any threat to a global grand plan. Now, it's kind of our worst nightmares explained and conspiracies confirmed. That's the bad news. But to understand what is happening, of course, is critical to our recovery, which I'm now convinced may, in fact, take a revolution. Given the dark and deep forces at work, I bumped up against them, and it's been laid out for us. Oh, my goodness. This film, called Thrive, and the interview coming up in about 30 minutes right here on the Green Front are a cannot miss. So tell everybody to gather around the computer and tune in, because you won't want to miss it, and you certainly won't want to miss the film. Just released 11/11/11, so not even a week old. You heard it first on the Green Front. I got a preview copy. I've watched most of it, and it is, well, riveting is the best word to describe it. It's a step-by-step roadmap to what got us here and how we get out of this global downward spiral. How can you resist that, right? But first up on the Green Front, my friends Roger and Susan. They are my friends Roger and Susan of the Climate Change Action email group. They are active on Global Warming Education Network. In fact, they're co-founders of that, Roger and Susan Schemel. And they're going to tell us what they've been up to lately. Never a dull moment. They're running up to D.C. to be in the tar sands protest to get arrested, if that's what it calls for, and it has. And they have some really good ideas, a couple of things in particular we're going to talk about in just a moment. And I want to just tell you that we are talking to two people who were Republicans, and we'll find out if Roger and Susan still identify as Republicans. They were climate neutral in terms of their concern about global warming, as we called it a few years ago, and they have turned into climate hawks, the likes of which I have not met too many of. They're in my inbox almost every day, thanks to our mutual friend and incredible content aggregator, D.R. Tucker, and I just have been trying to get them on the last few weeks because they have been really in the thick of it at the White House, and they've got an idea that I think the time has come right now. We're going to find out what it is. Thanks for joining me on the Green Front, Roger and Susan. Do I have both of you?
Yes, I'm here, Betsy.
Hi, I'm here, too.
Wonderful. So just a bit of brief background, if one of you could tell our listeners who may have not heard you when you were on some time ago, you know, how you went from, you know, thinking that if global warming is really a problem, well, our government would be talking about it, they'd be on it, to being convinced au contraire and becoming activists, in fact.
Well, it was basically our middle daughter who encouraged us to go see An Inconvenient Truth, and so we went, and when we came out of that, we were like, holy cow, and Roger's a chemist, and I have a scientific background, and we said, oh my gosh, we got to look into this more, and the more we looked in, the more alarmed we became, and she then, my daughter, told us about Bill McKibben's original walk in Vermont, so we participated in that, which allowed us to meet a lot more climate concerned, and the more people we met who were concerned, the more concerned we became, and we did a lot of reading, a lot of research, and attended a ton of talks at numerous universities, and you can't pick apart the science, you just can't.
Betsy, we both grew up in the Midwest and in Republican families, and I was working at Arthur D. Little, an international management consulting firm, in the 70s when the concerns came up about a hole in the Earth's ozone layer in the stratosphere. And as a result, Arthur D. Little did a study for the U.S. EPA, and to make a long story short, Reagan was president. The facts were clear that the ozone layer was being destroyed in the upper stratosphere by our use of chlorofluorocarbons as aerosol propellants in hairsprays and underarm deodorants. And President Reagan, obviously a Republican, actually led the world among the world's leaders to be the first person to sign an international agreement called the Montreal Protocol, which limited international production of these harmful chemicals. And basically, seeing that, I, still being a Republican, thought, okay, when we have a problem, the Republicans are going to take care of it. And life went on, and I would read occasionally about climate change in the journals I'd get, and I'd read one side and the other and believed it was just another controversy that the government would resolve when the facts became clear. So as Susan said, when we went to see Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth, it was actually the first time that I'd thought about it seriously for more than a few minutes, and as Susan said, we came out saying, gee whiz, what's going on here? And as it's gone on, we've become more and more concerned that, you know, our leader, President Obama, does not have the wherewithal, even though he's in the Democratic Party and we worked hard to get him elected in 2008, he doesn't seem to have what it takes to be a leader on this critical issue of climate change, which is even more serious and a much greater concern, or at least it should be, than ever the fluorocarbons were creating the hole in the ozone layer.
And apparently, President Obama has just issued what could be viewed as his strongest remarks yet on climate change. Apparently has to go to Australia to do that. He said that policies to curb carbon emissions bring economic benefits, but acknowledged that crafting an international deal that imposes commitments on China and India will be a tough slog. He appeared at a press conference with Australia's Prime Minister and touted U.S. policies, including increased auto efficiency standards and green energy research investments, and said, quote, as we move forward over the next several years, my hope is that the U.S., as one of several countries with a big carbon footprint, you think, can find further ways to reduce our carbon emissions. So he says, goes on to say, I think that's good for the world. I actually think over the long term it's good for our economies as well, because it's my strong belief that industries, utilities, individual consumers, we're all going to have to adapt how we use energy and how we think about carbon. So that is according to the latest, and that is encouraging, and he may need a little more prodding, though. And so, well, before we get to your idea for how what he can do about that, how he can do it, just tell us a little bit about your experience at the White House recently with the tar sands protests. That will bring us up to date, and then we'll look forward.
Well, we participated in both the arrests and the recent Surround the White House tar sand event. Obviously, it wasn't it was a little unnerving to get arrested. I've never had more than one speeding ticket in my life, and the thought of being handcuffed and led away was, I had difficulty sleeping the night before, quite frankly. But
so
once the day came,
you didn't take it lightly going up there to get arrested, to be prepared to be arrested.
Right, and yes, it took, you know, I had to overcome this idea that good people don't get arrested. You know, good people don't get in trouble with the police. And I had to come to the realization that we're at the point where we do need civil disobedience to fight for the environment if that's what's going to take. And my reservations were mainly that I was afraid it wouldn't do any good, that I was afraid I was going to put myself on the line and it wasn't going to move the ball at all. That was my chief reservation. As it happened, you know, the actual experience wasn't as traumatic as the anticipation of the experience. Roger was the last one to get arrested the day we got arrested, so he was out there longer than any of us. And the White House does take the females first. There were objections to this from within the group, but this is just the policy. And at that point, I felt fortunate to be a woman.
Well, we have to give credit to Bill McKibben of 350.org. We've been following him since he walked across Vermont a number of years ago and helped organize a number of fairly large events in Concord, Massachusetts. We organized a revolutionary energy rally. And to make a long story short, when Bill McKibben said, okay, we think this will help, we decided after much debate we're going to do it. And we'd actually been through a dry run of this because a number of organizations had cooperated the prior March to help encourage Congress to shut down the coal plant.
That it was two marches ago, yeah.
That provides energy to Congress. So we were prepared to be arrested there, but there were so many people surrounding the coal plant, thousands, that the police backed down and we didn't get arrested.
The reason there were arrests in front of the White House is that basically you have to be moving between these two posts, and we refused to move.
There were a total of 1,253 people that got arrested, and that was the beginning of the plan to surround the White House on November 6th, which involved 12,000 people. And we were carrying signs because we felt it was even more important than stopping the pipeline to get Obama talking about climate, because with or without the pipeline, we still have this huge climate change problem. And we're very encouraged to read this morning that Bill McKibben just wrote a piece in Salon a couple days ago entitled, "Has Global Warming Become a Campaign Issue?" in which he argues that now that all the GOP candidates, including Romney.
That would be a good block.
Your friend Romney.
Including Romney have said that they don't believe climate change is real or that man is not causing it. As Bill points out, and it's sort of as we've been saying too, this is a perfect opportunity for Obama to run a campaign based on science, something which has made this country a world leader and which will continue to lead us into the future. So we're hoping that more and more people in the Obama administration and his campaign strategists in particular will see the wisdom of speaking out about climate, because in a democracy where we have millions of people who are misinformed about climate change and think that it's not a problem, their denial is fed by the fact that our leader is not speaking out about it. One of my brothers said to me after hearing me spout off about climate change for week after week, "Hey, Roger, if this is such an important issue, why are you the only one talking about it?"
Right. I know that feeling.
Right.
Yeah. And, it's because some of us, and for better or worse, and it is a blessing and a curse, I'm sure you agree, have mm-hmm. been following this, and yet it's still a parallel universe experience.
It is.
Oh, it definitely is.
So how can we cross that divide, guys? What's the bridge? What's one good, important thing that President Obama could do that would really wake up America and get, mainstream Americans to tune in to not only our environment, but what is going on with climate change, which you would think would be pretty dramatic and hard to ignore by now, but apparently not the case, not quite.
Well, we're promoting something new, and we have a friend in the climate movement who constantly urges us to think outside the box, which we think is important, because I think Einstein once said you can't solve today's problems with yesterday's ideas. And since man-made climate change has not occurred in the history of man, we need to do some outside-the-box thinking. So our idea that we think is the most important is that President Obama should go on primetime national television and give a one-hour State of the Climate address with John Holdren, his science advisor, and Steve Chu, Secretary of Energy, and Nobel Prize winner by his side, and point out to American people that climate change is real, it's man-made, and it presents a tremendous opportunity for America to build a new green economy with green jobs, because we need a lot of work done to convert our economy from one that's based on fossil fuels to one that's based on renewable energy from sun, wind, geothermal, or other sources. So with Obama doing that, pointing out the opportunity, and letting people know that there's not only that huge carrot, but also a stick in the background if we don't act, basically in the form of increasing wild weather events, which are damaging crops and homes and other property, that people will get it and get on board, and we can all work together in a World War II-like effort to do incredible things to make this country a world leader on climate change confrontation.
And I think go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, I think if the U.S. would take the lead, that it would, the other countries would follow. I think it's very lame to pick on China and India when we're not doing what we should be doing. And I think if we consider the world, ourselves the world leaders, we should lead. Solitaire Townsend of the U.K. said once that she wished America would get on board with this, because when America does things, they do things better than anybody else. And I think that's really a wise statement.
And yet we're so not on it still. And it's perplexing. And I guess, you know, some of the recent articles I've read, you know, because it's invisible, because, you know, some people still don't see it as the immediate threat, it certainly is. And because maybe it's so overwhelmingly frightening, those are key ingredients or something like that, recipe for denial. And it seems that must be part of what's at work, although the producers of Thrive, coming up in the next segment, think it's even a darker conspiracy, which could also be the case. Maybe it's both.
Right. It is a perfect recipe for denial. It's the same thing that happened in Nazi Germany, from everything I read, which I could never understand until thinking about it in the context of climate change. When something's invisible and very ugly and seems like a threat to our normal way of life, people would rather go on not believing it. And having our leaders and all of the GOP candidates talking about it as if, in the case of the GOP candidates, it's a hoax or not caused by man, and our elected leader not talking about it much at all, it basically enables that denial, which is bad for the country, bad for the climate, and bad for everybody. So we've got to change that.
And it is an apt comparison, because I'm experiencing, even where I live, I say this often, but, you know, trying to have green tea parties and get people concerned, you know, mostly parents, about what kind of environmental future we're leaving our children. It's almost like you mentioned, you know, we're going to be discussing climate change and what's happening with our oceans and resource depletion and peak oil. And it's like, sorry, can't, too busy.
Right.
Like, oh, my God, you would do anything for your child except look at this reality. What is it? I'm starting to call it the green ceiling. You know, it's just like everything else somehow is very compelling. And I'm indicting a lot of people in saying this, so I'm not pointing the blame at any individuals or even groups. It just seems to be endemic. And if I see it here again in the progressive Bay Area, where we think we're not in denial, you know, what's wrong with this picture? And only then can I start to kind of imagine how, you know, what was going on with the Holocaust could have been ignored. I don't understand this piece of human psychology, and I really don't understand why some of us didn't get that gene, you know, kind of wish we did sometimes, that ability to block out and compartmentalize
so
well, you know, but it's not universal, but enough of us didn't get it.
Well, one good thing that might help act as a little bit of a catalyst here is that a Massachusetts resident who lives in the area here, Jill Stein, announced her candidacy for president on the Green Party ticket a few weeks ago. And on Saturday, she came out with a statement congratulating climate change activists on what they did in turning the Obama administration back from the approval of the controversial Keystone Pipeline. And she went on to say that the Department of State, the State Department's mention of why they did this says that it's because of the route of the pipeline, which she goes on to say fails utterly to address the critical issue, which is the amount of carbon that would be put in the atmosphere by exploiting the Canadian tar sands. So that no matter what route is taken, the pipeline is a disaster for the planet, and no further study is needed to come to this conclusion. She goes on to call for a Green New Deal that would redirect money now spent on wars for oil, Wall Street bailouts, and tax breaks for the wealthy to building this new green economy. So last night, this is a little bit funny, campaign
We need funny. He's good.
Somebody called from the Democratic National Committee, which, you know, they were on their list because we worked so hard to get Obama elected in 08. So they went into, can you give some money? So I basically told the story of how I changed parties to get Obama elected in 08 after seeing what he promised to do on climate, that I was disappointed by what he'd actually done, that I'd been to the White House to be arrested with my wife and thousands of other people, and then surrounded the White House to get Obama to cancel the pipeline. And furthermore, I had just given some money to Jill Stein for the reasons I just told you. By the time I was through, this young man said, well, gee whiz, keep doing what you're doing. And actually, I've heard other people saying that, too. So I said to him, well, tell your boss, because this is an important issue, and if Obama were to come out and speak out on the importance of addressing climate change and what it could do to rebuild the American economy, I would switch over to fully support him and do everything I could to get him elected.
In the meantime, I think the Green Party with Jill Stein at the helm, you know, is not a bad idea. I mean, of course, it'll never win, but, you know, kind of wondered why the Green Party wasn't more actively, you know, using what's going on with our environment, you know, to, you know, they've always been green, but it's kind of a general, more generic shade of green, in my view.
Well,
so it's really great to see this.
Jill Stein is a physician, and she understands the ramifications of health and climate change, and she actually is feeling that she can do more good in the political realm than she can practicing as a physician. So she's a terrific, bright person.
More compelling, mm-hmm. given her background.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's worth taking a look at, you know, because I read that piece, and she says exactly what we say. And, you know, maybe the Green Tea Party can merge with the Green Party after all. And,
well,
you know, whatever it takes, right?
The Obama people are, and many others make this comparison with Obama versus the Republican candidates, and who would you rather have? And actually, I confronted one of the campaign strategists who was trying to recruit us to make do a phone bank the very day we were going to surround the White House. So I explained our story to her, and she came back and said, well, Roger, wouldn't you rather have Obama than one of the Republican candidates in the White House? I told her, well, you know, if you've got two choices and they're both basically carrying you in a raft heading for a waterfall, it really doesn't matter that much which one I vote for. We need to be rowing towards the shore to avoid that problem. So your argument doesn't really hold water with me. And
so to speak.
We've got to get people away from that.
Very apt picture there. And it's just a matter of who's going to get us there faster, but going the wrong direction, of course.
That's right. So hopefully Jill Stein will show the way.
And speaking of speed, let's talk a minute about your Go the Limit campaign. How's that going?
Well, thank you. We have this idea that if we need to get a little bit more pressure on folks to wake up about this problem, we have another arrow in our quiver, which we call Go the Limit, and there's more information at gothelimit.org or at Gwen's website,
www.gwenet.org.
gwenet.org. In any case, the idea is for a legal form of activism whereby concerned citizens drive the speed limit on national highways, but do so in a way that it wakes people up to the fact that there's a problem, because we would combine going with a friend on the highway at the speed limit with media advisories that would point out to people that this is an approach where we want to slow people down a little bit to the legal speed limit, since most people are actually speeding, and have them think about where we're headed with this ignorance of climate change, and basically to serve as a wake-up call to Americans that we're heading in a direction that people are not going to be happy about when the S hits the F, so to speak, and when we have things like food shortages cropping up. And the real danger is that Americans have always, as Susan mentioned with her quotation a few minutes ago, risen to the occasion when things become obviously bad to everyone. And the problem with climate change is because it's so stealthy, we can reach climate tipping points before things become so obviously bad that everyone's aware of them. So it's up to our leaders, and this is why we've developed things like radar at the time of World War II, so that the leaders can see things that everyday citizens cannot see with all the resources the leaders have. And our government has spent $20 billion or more over the course of the last 20 years studying climate change, so we know what's happening. But the failure of the leaders to point out a problem is a big failing of our government. So Go the Limit would be a way to wake people up, and we're planning something on the International Day of Climate Action, which is timed with the Durban Climate Talks in South Africa on Saturday, December 3rd, worldwide, local time, wherever you are. We're encouraging concerned citizens to try Go the Limit. And again, you can get more information at gothelimit.org.
Fabulous. And I have to bring people's attention to an article that we were passing around by Naomi Klein. You too probably read it from The Nation. Very in-depth, very impressive piece, connecting dots about capitalism and climate change. Capitalism versus climate change, in fact, is the title of that piece. Really kind of lets us know what we're up against. We're going to, again, go deeper on that subject in the next segment with the Thrive producers. But really, it's a must-read.
Well, Naomi Klein is another wonderful hero, along with Bill McKibben, and she's a marvelous spokeswoman, and it's wonderful that she's working with us, because hopefully she'll be another person who can raise people's awareness.
Yeah, she's really focused on this issue and in this article exclusively, and that's really great to see, because she
and
has
Canada
a wide following.
Canada is a problem, as well as the United States, certainly. Canada actually got, I think, the Dirtiest Nation Award during the Copenhagen talks. So
Naomi being a Canadian, it helps to have everybody cooperating. We need to get all the world leaders working together on this huge problem, and not trying to make points individually to reposition each country to some advantage. This is a call for global cooperation to save a livable climate for the human race. Give me a break.
Give me a break, right. And then you'd never know it from the current crop of Republicans. So
no.
you either Republicans or former Republicans, I don't know how you self-characterize these days politically.
Oh, I'm definitely not a Republican anymore.
I mean, because of this issue?
Actually, I kind of switched earlier because of women's issues. But Roger stuck with it until the climate issue. But, you know, we should mention that the Republican Party changed drastically since our youth. I mean, it's no longer the Republican Party of Teddy Roosevelt or even Richard Nixon, who signed the Clean Air Act into law. It's gone, you know, totally to the right, ignoring conservation of nature. You would think the conservatives would want to conserve nature, but they don't. I think this happened without our awareness, because we were just busy working and raising children. And
yeah, we woke up one day and said, okay, this is not the Republican Party we knew. It's been hijacked. But I must admit, I have written to both Romney and Huntsman about a month ago, and I said, if you would support climate change in your platform and doing something about it, I would throw my support to you. I got a request for a campaign contribution, a form letter back from Romney, and no word from Huntsman. And both of them are basically off my list right now, because they've both been backing away from the issue rather than supporting doing something.
Well, Roger and Susan Schemel, you are at the top of my favorite list. I just love what you're doing. I love communicating and sharing climate change content with you, and just love your story, and we'll continue to have you on periodically. I appreciate you taking time out of your very busy schedules to join me, but just had to get you on to talk about this demand for a State of the Climate speech. I think it's a brilliant idea and want to promote it in every way I can, and hopefully it will get picked up out there in the blogosphere.
Thank you for all you do, Betsy. And thanks for what you do.
Oh, thank you. And when we come back, we're going to speak to two producers. You cannot miss this interview. I'm thrilled to say that Foster Gamble and his co-producer and partner, Kimberly Carter Gamble, are in the house on the line, standing by to talk about their just-released film, Thrive. Oh, my goodness. It's going to change things. It better. They did a very good job documenting all kinds of things going on that we're all sensing and trying to see if it's all connected, and They say everything in that film, this film, has been fact-checked. So how can you not stand by for that? We'll be right back. You're listening to The Green Front. I'm your excited host, Betsy Rosenberg.